Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Uh-oh. WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
Don't tell me. We're about to go over a huge waterfowl.
Yep.
Sharp rocks at the bottom?
Most likely.
Sports Talk Saturday.
Bring it on.
On WGR.
Booyah!
Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here, Joe DiBiase in studio, Derek Kramer on the beats and the updates, which is the same thing.
The beats, the boards, the updates.
Beats, boards, Battlestar Galactica. And what we're going to do now is I promise we're going to talk some NBA and NHL playoffs. We're going to do that in the next half hour. Right now, I'd like to replay from yesterday Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders, and he's an ESPN NFL analyst as well. He had a lot of interesting things to say. I saw the quotes. I didn't hear it, so I would like to hear it, and I'd like to react with Joe after we listen. So here's Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders.
Aaron with Football Outsiders joins us now on the Wester Hotline. Aaron, how's life?
Hey, life is good, man. Busy, 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 working on the preseason book.
All right. Well, we'll talk a lot of football here, but I do want to ask you a question for all the times you've been on. I think I've never asked you before. And that is, if you go to Aaron's Twitter page, you see him sitting with Seth Meyers on the set of Seth Meyers' late night show on NBC. Aaron, with all due respect, how the heck did that happen? All right. Like, how did you end up on that show?
Seth Meyers is one of my Twitter followers. He's a regular buyer of the Football Outsiders Almanac, one of our readers. And so I reached out to him, to be on the show 2 years ago.
And he was like, let's do it. I mean, he obviously was up for that.
Yeah, definitely. Got me in touch with the bookers, and we did the show. It was great. It was a lot of fun. One of the most fun things I've done.
Howie Mandel was on that night. Did you get to interact with him?
No, it's a surprise. I didn't realize. I thought it would be like when I'd done like ESPN stuff where everybody's sitting in the same green room. But when you do like a big show like that, everybody gets their own dressing room. So I never even interacted with the other guests.
And also a senator, Senator Tammy Duckworth was also on that show. And
yep,
I'm seeing that now. And so Seth Meyers, like I feel like if he follows you, he really knows the NFL.
Yeah, he's a huge Steelers fan.
So he impressed. Did you know that already? Like, did you know that he was like knowledgeable and an avid fan before like he went on there? Or did you get a chance to talk to him and maybe find out more about that?
Yeah, he'll ask me questions about the Steelers sometimes in direct messages, like what I think about what moves they've made and stuff.
I wonder what he does with that information. You think he just puts it in his pocket, or does he? I don't know. I wonder.
Brags at cocktail parties.
Well, given the way Steelers fans are, he probably kind of agonizes over it because the Steelers are like the one fan base that instead of always arguing that their team is better than you say they are, they always seem to be arguing that their team is worse than you say they are.
What a nice problem to have as a fan. What is that? That's like an alternate universe from where we've been living for, I don't know, our entire adult lives, Aaron.
And it's not even of all really good teams are like that, but it's something about Steelers fans that I've found.
That's so interesting. I wonder why too. Like, they are the ones who the Pittsburgh fans will argue that their team is worse than, because then I guess you'd have to flip it and be like guys who say I hate your team. You'd be like I actually love the Steelers. You'd have to flip that.
Look, we're going to it for this year. Our numbers like the Steelers more than conventional wisdom again. So.
Yeah.
Oh, here we are. I'm going to be waving the flag for the Steelers again, and the Steelers fans are going to be like, oh, no, our team is falling apart. Look at all the drama that we had this offseason. No more Antonio Brown. No more this. No more that. I mean, you know, no more Le'Veon Bell, but they almost made the playoffs last year, and they didn't have Le'Veon Bell last year. So
right.
I think their defense, they've got a lot of talent on defense. And on offense, you know, Roethlisberger's getting a little older, but, you know, with like a lot of these older quarterbacks, Phillip Rivers, obviously Brady and Breeze, like we're still waiting for him to fall off the cliff. It's
right.
going to happen at some point, but it's hard to predict that this is the year for any of those guys.
Well, how do you think they will, like getting past Bell is one thing. We've probably talked with you dozens of times about running backs and their value and how replaceable even the very best guys can be and still not really alter overall team performance that dramatically. How about Antonio Brown? You know, they're not exactly bereft of receivers, but Brown might be the best, and he's gone. So how do you think they offset that?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, that's a hard one to overcome. I think their offense is not going to be as good as it was last year because Antonio Brown is one of the best receivers in the league, and you don't just snap your fingers and replace that. That way, you know, that being said, they still have a number one receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster. So they've got guys waiting in the wings like James Washington. They should be able to still have a strong passing game. It's probably not going to be as strong without Antonio Brown. But one of the things that they still have is offensive line continuity. They're going to have a new right tackle this year, but the rest of that offensive line has played together 4 or 5 years without missing a lot of time.
Roethlisberger led the league, maybe by a lot, in attempts last year. Roethlisberger threw more than double the number of passes last year Josh Allen did. And I know Josh Allen didn't start every week, but 320 attempts for the Bills quarterback. Roethlisberger, 675. I mean, how can you?
Oh my God.
How can we go? Yeah, he's in decline or whatever. Like when you're throwing like this, that's maybe even his career high. It's a crazy number. That's more than 40 a week.
Projections for this year. I think our projections, early projections that I've done, we would have probably Roethlisberger with at least 150 more pass attempts than Allen. It's just a very different offense.
Yeah. Right. So how about the Bills, Aaron? I think this year I've detected so far more optimism from the sort of the objective, you know, quotes, the national crowd a little bit, the media. Have you thought that or noticed that, and are you a part of it?
I've noticed a lot of optimism about the moves that the Bills have made in the offseason, that they've made a lot of good moves. And here's the thing. I think they've made a lot of good moves. The problem is that where they were going to be before those moves is not as good as I think where Bills fans think that they would be before those moves. So even after making a lot of good moves, I'm not that optimistic about them. On defense, it simply comes down to the issue of defense being much less consistent than offense, right? So this team was really lifted by its defense. They were second or third in our defensive ratings last year, and they're likely not going to be that good again. And it's nothing about the personnel. It's just because of how defense is in the NFL. It's just inconsistent from year to year. And on offense, we go back to the same problem that we have every time I've spoken to you guys for the last year, which is I'm just not a Josh Allen believer. I do not think that there is an NFL starting quarterback in there waiting to come out and develop. And if I'm wrong, then, I mean, you know, they've done a lot to give him help. But if I'm right, then they're still in trouble.
Mm-hmm. How are you? I'm not sure. I'm not meaning to rush to this question, but how are you on schedules? We have, the strength of schedule ratings based on last year's record, and or even you know other guys are taking that up a level, you know, incorporating moves and everything. But like the AFC East teams have, it's thought, as far as we can tell, the weaker schedules this year based on the division matchups. What is that something you respect?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, I have to respect that idea as much as I respect my own projections, right? Because we do projections, and thus we do schedule strength based on our projections. Now, we know that our projections are not going to be completely accurate. We're going to be wrong about some teams, and therefore our projection of schedule strength is going to be wrong about some teams. But our projection of schedule strength is as good as our team projections are. And when you look at our team projections, we absolutely have Buffalo with one of the easier schedules in the league. So we have them with more average wins in a season than you would get from a team with a similar overall rating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's one of the reasons why, like, I know that defense fluctuates. Like, I think Mike might have learned that from you initially, and, like, we've talked about it many, many times with you and then just on our regular show, Aaron. But the level of opposition would lend itself to think, I think, at least on the surface, from my view, that the defense has a reasonable chance of being pretty good because they're not facing really dominant offenses.
I don't have a difference between the offense and defense schedules in front of me. But, yeah, I mean, look, Miami is our projected worst team in the league. The Jets, you know, are about in the same place Buffalo is, you know, as far as, you know, an easy schedule
right.
will make them look better than they are. And they've got a lot of pieces that could come together, but might not. And then you've got the teams they play. I mean, Washington and the Giants are a mess. So that, I mean, Washington's not a mess, but, you know, rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's sort of a mess on purpose, I guess, because they want to, you know, they want Haskins to learn. And I'm assuming that Haskins is going to be starting the whole year. If he's not starting the whole year, he'll be starting from pretty early on, I'm guessing. And then the other division that they play is the
North, AFC North.
North. Okay, well, that's a good division. I mean, that's, you know, Cleveland's going to be better this year. Pittsburgh's going to be better than people generally think they are. Baltimore is still a good team. But overall, the Buffalo schedule, yeah, the Buffalo schedule comes out.
You mentioned the Giants. Just real quick, Aaron, are you enjoying the Giants as much as everybody else with Gettleman and all the different things?
He really has set himself up as the arch rival of all of us analytics people, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I try not to dabble in Schadenfreude, so I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, allow me to, like, take joy out of the Giants fans' misery. I mean, so, you know, not every team gets to be good. Some teams have to be bad, and right now it looks like the Giants are one of those teams. I would hope that they would get things better. I too was shocked by taking Daniel Jones 6th overall. given his, you have to put so much weight on the idea that his college performance was bad because of his lack of teammates and the difficult schedule that Duke played. You have to put so much weight on those two things to believe that he is a top 10 pick. I can't imagine those two things being that important.
Right. There's not only, like, making the selection, but – and maybe Gettleman was just – I've said before that it almost sounded like he was trolling everyone, talking about just how casually he arrived at the decision. That's how he depicted it anyway. He went to the Senior Bowl, watched a couple of drives, and fell in love. And, like, wow. That just does not sound like how I'd want to choose my quarterback.
They're going to do the Aaron Rodgers plan, and they were going to leave him on the bench for 3 years. Nobody leaves a rookie quarterback on the bench for 3 years in the modern NFL. I mean, you ask me, of the three quarterbacks taken in the first round, who's going to play the fewest games this year? I think it's Jones, right? Like, my guess is that Jones doesn't come in until, like, December. But, you know, it's once you've got that rookie, you turn the team over to him. You know, you don't wait 3 years or whatever. And, hey, listen, it was a good pick for Buffalo fans, because it's one of the reasons why they were able to get Oliver.
Right.
Right? Oliver was, mm-hmm. pick was that?
Nine.
So if it wasn't for the players that got taken 6, 7, and 8 not being Oliver, Buffalo would have not gotten Oliver. And listen, I mean, like I said, despite the fact that I expect regression from the defense, it doesn't mean that I don't appreciate the moves that the team made in the offseason, and Oliver was a great pick.
What did you think of the 12 hours or less or whatever we had where it looked like the Bills were getting Antonio Brown? Did you go ahead and process that? I doubt you did numbers on it, but, like, what should that have meant? What would that have meant to them?
I mean, it would have been a sweet ad. It would have been a sweet addition. What can you say? I guess he's one of the, I think even after last year's sort of down year, you have to think that he's one of the 10 best receivers in the league. That would have been a really big plus. You know, I mean, the difference between a guy who's really done it, like Antonio Brown, and a guy who, God, he's always been the guy that we think is going to do it, like John Brown, is a big difference. But I didn't count my chickens before they hatched.
Okay. Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders. Speaking of the quarterbacks drafted, Kyler Murray, what do you expect?
Well, it's interesting because our projection system is still based pretty heavily on experience for top prospects. And it's hard to know what to expect when you have guys like Murray and Haskins who have 1 year of starting experience.
Right.
the number of quarterbacks in the NFL taken in the first two rounds who have only 1 year of starting experience. Like, it's not that it's a bad group. It's that it's basically a non-existent group. I mean, you're talking about, like, Mitch Trubisky, Brock Osweiler, Mark Sanchez. I mean, you have to go back to guys like Matt Blunden in 1992 to start finding guys with 1 year of starting experience. The other thing is, it's interesting trying to project Arizona's fantasy stats, because you have, on one hand, Kyler Murray, who you expect to run the ball a lot. On the other hand, I don't know if there's a head coach in college football who is as pass-centric as Cliff Kingsbury. So how are you going to sort of balance those two things? I think we're going to expect Murray to throw the ball more than most people expect, just because that's just how Kingsbury does.
We had Mike Clay on this week, and he told us how Murray, he knew that Murray was aware of his projections on him, and that was about 100 rushes. And Murray told him, it's going to be way more than that. So I kind of like that.
We actually have less than that, because
Okay. We're
trying to think of how Cliff Kingsbury calls an offense. But you don't know, because Cliff Kingsbury's never had a player like this. It's very difficult to sort of figure out where you get the balance between Kingsbury, his scheming on one hand, and Murray's abilities on the other.
Right. What do you expect the Gronkowski effect to be in New England?
I mean, I think it hurts them. We don't have them as our number one team in the AFC for the first time in many years going into the season. There's no question that that's a big loss. Were their offense going to suddenly fall apart? No. But if you look back at the last 4 or 5 years, like, there's no question, Brady's numbers are not as good without Gronkowski in the lineup. And they're not really replacing him. I mean, Benjamin Watson is 38 years old. That is not a replacement.
You have Kansas City one?
We have the Los Angeles Chargers.
Oh, is that right?
Wow, all right.
That's kind of cool.
The Chiefs, too. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I think with the Chiefs, the defense still looks like a bit of a mess. And your offense, we're expecting a little bit of regression, because just they were so extreme last year. But also, we don't know what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill, but we're figuring they're going to lose him for at least half the season.
Right.
All right. You mentioned the Browns a little bit ago. Are you big on that being like a home run? Like, is that a team that is projecting as like a 10 or 11 win team, or is that a little too fast?
I think it's Jeff Schwartz, the former NFL tackle, who said on Twitter that there's no value in the Browns over under at this point, because it's not like you're predicting that they'll be bad, but their over under is like 9, and as many talented players that they've added, like, how can you predict that the average of their possibilities is higher than that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're sort of along those same lines. Like, we're going to end up with Pittsburgh higher than Cleveland. I think we're going to end up with Cleveland as the 6th or 7th team in the AFC, and Pittsburgh is 3rd or 4th. But I mean, I love what Cleveland's doing. I think they're building a wonderful team. I think they're getting a lot of talent. But we expect some regression from their defense, which had a lot of turnovers last year. That tends to regress towards the mean from year to year. There is going to be, I think, improvement on the offense. But, they were so good in the second half of the year last year on offense. But in general, teams that improve that much on offense in the second half of the year, it doesn't carry over as much to the following year as you would expect. Like, it's much easier to predict how good they'll be on offense based on all 16 games of last year rather than just the last 8.
That's a really important point, I think, for anybody who's trying to figure stuff out. You know, like, and the Bills had some good days late in the season last year. They played weak teams in that stretch, and I think that's a really important thing. And by the way, since you mentioned over-under in the Browns, I remember now that a couple of years ago their over-under was 4, and I'm like, being the somewhat of a slave to projections as I am, come on, 4. Like, that's nothing to win 4. I bet Aaron would say they'll probably win at least 4 games, because the worst teams probably will do that, and they, 0-16, so I lost on that.
Right.
Yeah, I think Hugh Jackson was a bad coach to an almost unmatched degree. That team was not bad enough to go 0-16, but they went 0-16 anyway.
What's Miami? Like, what kind of number would you need to bet under on Miami?
to bet under on Miami. I think we have their average season now at 4.4 wins.
All right.
I mean, they're the worst team by a fairly good margin.
That's about what Cleveland might have been a couple years ago. That's probably probably close to that. Interesting.
Oh, we won't have any team that is as good, predicted to be as good as Miami is predicted to be bad.
Okay. There it is. Aaron, any questions for us?
No, man. It's always good to talk to you guys. It's always good to hear how Bills Nation is thinking.
Thank you. I mean, it's kind of a thing. Like, here we are, three of us. Here we are, right? I mean, all these years, we still talk once in a while. Used to be more, and things are kind of the same as ever. I mean, it's just really how little it's changed in whatever it is. It could be more than a decade since we started calling you. I mean, it really just has not changed at all.
Listen, I would love, for Bill's fans' sake, I would love to be wrong about Allen, right? And I mean, it would be wonderful if they could build the team that takes over when the Patriots, you know, when Brady and Belichick finally retire. That would be great for those fans to have that happiness. But, I mean, at this point, as far as, like, pulling for a fan base that hasn't had a lot of happiness in a long time, all three of the other AFC East teams sort of
right.
That. So
that's right.
I mean, at some point, somebody's going to have some happiness because the Patriots are not going to keep going like until the end of time.
This again is something he could have said in 2012 to us.
I marked the date this year. It was right after the draft. Mike said, Brady's not going to be good forever. Like, one of us always gets there in the spring, and it's just like for years and years and years, probably a good 10 years, we've been saying it that way, and here we are.
But
it's true.
It's true, right, but I don't walk around thinking that. Like, more just the fact that we have 5 days a week to do.
Right, yeah.
That is more just like...
Same here, right.
You know, you got to change the words and the sound a little bit now and then. But it's true. It is true. Someday that will be the case. Aaron, have a great holiday weekend. Thanks, as always, for your time.
All right. Talk to you guys probably sooner, too, when the book comes out in a month or two.
So that was Aaron Schatz. I could say his name wrong. I just get this level of
You don't like how he says what he's saying?
I just get this feeling like at the end when he says, I'd love to be wrong about Josh Allen, this level of not being genuine.
You know why I don't get that feeling from him? Because he is very upfront, but also like he doesn't sugarcoat a lot of stuff that he says. So that makes me feel like that is genuine.
But if Josh Allen really – listen, he's not the only one that would have a lot at stake if Josh Allen was good. And he turned out to be good. There's a lot of people that died on that hill, and there will be no reviving them if Josh Allen is good.
Sure.
Especially going
back to the draft.
Having said that, some of the things that he mentions, right? Like, the thing that stood out to me, the quote that stood out to me yesterday, why I wanted to listen to the whole thing, was strictly, basically him saying, if Josh Allen's good, it's not good. I won't be wrong. Really, like, it's basically how he said it. It's like, it won't be because I was wrong. It would be because they put things around him.
Well, unless he's good because he's if he's driving the bus. I see what you're saying, but I also kind of see what he's saying. If Allen is playing almost kind of like what Lamar Jackson
like
did
Troy
for Baltimore
Aikman.
Last year.
So if he's Troy Aikman, he won't give
him respect. Our boy Troy Aikman.
Yeah.
If he is playing pretty well and the rest of the team is just super good.
Yeah.
And the defense is best in the league. And LeSean McCoy has a resurgence.
So what
and they make the playoffs
in this
because
example,
of that. Then yes.
In this example, though, so then we have to discount a lot of what Patrick Mahomes did last year.
Sure. Well, if on the other hand, if Allen does like what Mahomes did last year, and he's throwing for 50 touchdowns, and he's throwing the ball all over the place, then...
But he's got the team around
that's
him.
That's different.
He's got the team around him, though.
But it would still be him utilizing the team around him, mm-hmm. not necessarily being a passenger.
But a lot of
the
same
around
things around Patrick Mahomes coming out were a lot of, not necessarily
true,
to the same
true.
Extent.
That's true.
But he
Mahomes
did not
was,
look good
Mahomes
in his
was,
first start.
Mahomes was still the keys to the ignition last year. Like, that whole team doesn't go the way it did if it's not Mahomes.
I agree with that.
Now, that's what I'm saying. If Allen is taking all of these tools and he is using them to make himself the reason you are now a great team, like a lot of great quarterbacks do in the league, then that's different. But if he's throwing for 3,000 yards and he's basically being Blake Bortles 2.0, then he does not.
Well, here's the thing.
He wouldn't get the credit from me, at least, for being the like a great pick and the reason that they're good.
Josh Allen's going to sink or swim this year. There's not going to be a middle ground. There's not going to be a Blake Bortles transition ground. That's not going to happen. And here's why.
What do you mean by that?
What they showed they want the offense to be at the end of last year when Josh Allen was playing at his peak is this spread them out, five wides, we're throwing the football. So for me, you don't get to really have a middle ground there. Like, there's not going to be, well, maybe he doesn't end up throwing for 4,500 yards and 28-30 touchdowns, right? But if he doesn't do that, I don't think there's going to be this middle ground with the type of offense that they're going to attempt to run with him. It's either going to be Josh Allen is throwing for 4,000 yards, 20 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, 22 and 12, something like that. Otherwise, it's going to be really bad. I don't think there's a middle ground.
I think there is.
I just, based on the...
You couldn't foresee him being like an average quarterback in the league this year?
Not with the offense that they're trying to run. No. I don't think the offense that they're trying to run will absolutely... It's going to reveal the depth of your... How about this? It's going to reveal the ultimate talent level of your quarterback.
What is Jameis Winston to you? Because that is what Winston has been the past couple years is a type of season that I wouldn't predict for Allen, but I could definitely foresee Allen having. Like some turnovers, a lot of passing the ball, some athleticism. Allen a lot more than Winston, but like a little bit erratic, but also like, okay, like decent.
To me, that would be like a middle ground. I think on field, if you looked at Jameis Winston, I think, okay, yeah, you know, maybe that's right. That's a really hard comparison for any quarterback because Jameis Winston, I feel, has a lot of problems with respect. And what I mean by that is respect from his teammates. He's got an uphill battle getting the respect of his teammates because I think a lot of people think he's not a very serious player.
Well, he hasn't been in shape almost his entire career. That's got to be part of it.
And just everything
off
the field.
Your franchise leader walks in the room.
Everything
off
the field. He's been suspended for stupid, immature stuff.
On the field, though. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, like that type of season?
I do. I
could see that happening.
I don't know. I look at it, and I think that it's going to be one extreme or another. I just don't really see necessarily a middle ground with how they want him to be.
I'm still up in the air on whether I think Allen's actually going to turn out to be like
a starting level
quarterback. But I don't think it's completely impossible that he is just Blake Bortles. Not to an extent. Now, he's got a way bigger arm than him, but you know what I mean? Like, a great defense, and, like, really the only thing Bortles was good at in his career in Jacksonville was running the football.
Well, you see,
himself.
This is the thing that I enjoy about what they're going to do.
That's as bad as it could get, and it probably won't get that bad, but that is, like, the floor still.
What I appreciate the Bills doing, and I remember this being a conversation when Josh Allen was drafted, and I remember this conversation between Mike and Chris about don't wait a year to start Josh Allen. Josh Allen needs to start now. We need to know by the end of year two. We need to at least have an 80% conviction that yes or no on Josh Allen.
Yep.
So what Baltimore's doing, they are probably not going to know about their quarterback until year four. And that is a ton of time invested. And the reason I say that is by what kind of offense they're trying to do. They're trying to hide Lamar Jackson. That is what they're doing. That's what they did last year. It's why you bring in Greg Roman. They're trying to hide their quarterback's passing ability. The Bills, they don't need to hide Josh Allen's passing ability. He's got the goods in terms of arm strength, right?
Sure.
They don't need to hide it.
No,
but what they're
trying to maximize every part of his skill set.
And to be honest with you, they're not hedging.
Sure.
Like the Ravens are. The Ravens are hedging. And I appreciate about the Bills is that, you know what they're going to say? Is they should have a very, very, very good understanding of what Josh Allen is as a quarterback, as a starting caliber quarterback, or just a quarterback in general. At the end of this season, they should know more about Josh Allen than the Ravens know about Lamar Jackson. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Talking Bills, talking Josh Allen, and we're going to talk a lot of NBA playoffs when we come back. Little NBA playoffs. Joe and I, that's kind of our thing. So we're going to talk some NBA playoffs when we come back. Sports Talk Saturday rolls along here on WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's an excellent opportunity to spend some quiet time with them before they go off into their summer break and pick a little bit their brains about where they're at and where they'd like to go. And it was good. I saw Jack a couple of nights ago. It was an excellent first meeting.
The Krugs, Ralph Krueger, Sabres' new head coach. Apparently, Joe DiBiase liked him before all you fools. That's what he just said.
That's right. Yeah.
Does that make Joe the Krugs hipster? He liked him before it was cool?
I don't know.
Is that what a hipster means? Is that what hipster is?
That's their humble brag.
No, I thought hipsters like things that we have forgotten about. Like, right. They're the recyclers.
They're not the first to it,
are they? No, they're, in fact, hipsters are usually the last to it, but they're the last to just prop up a dying thing.
So,
you know?
If well, I was like, hey, I love Dan Bielsma, then I'd be a hipster.
Well, that would
yes,
just be,
I agree
just,
with that.
First okay. off, that would just be weird. I don't even think that hipsters would agree with you there. But, like, you always hear those people that's like, I liked it before it was cool kind of thing. Like, that's technically Joe.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah, I like him. I like the hire. I'm glad they went to it. I wonder, though, that me being a Premier League fan now kind of got me there in the first place. Whatever got me there, I got there. Southampton. That's where he was before.
Not Southampton. He's a worldly man, Ralph Krueger.
He would be, if they ever need a replacement for the Dos Equis, most interesting man in the world, I think he would be a candidate. Not saying he would be it, but he'd be in there.
How long did he sign?
Hockey coach, by the way, chairman in the Premier League, World Economic Forum, wrote a book in German.
How long was the term on his contract? 3 years?
Yes.
Dude, that hairdo in that book, his hairdo on that book is peak 90s.
Yeah, I think 3 years, though.
I've...
Why?
I just got this feeling, and it's going to clear up pretty soon here. And my feeling is, I don't know. I was in a very different place 2 years ago today with Jason Bottrell than I am right now. And
I think a lot of us are.
I think so. Yeah. And I just remember the talk around Jason Bottrell was kind of a similar narrative and talk around Ralph Krueger, in that all the national guys seemed to really like the selection. They were like, Jason Bottrell's the next one. This made so much sense. Great pickup by the Sabres.
Well, to be fair, he did try to get Krueger in his first coach search, but he wanted to stay at Southampton for the remainder of his contract.
But hear me out here. Jason Bottrell's decision-making process has not impressed me at all. And what I mean by that is, the amount of time it's taken him to react. He's a very reactionary guy. He is not, so far he has not shown the ability to assess a situation or a problem before it fully manifests itself. He allows these problems to fully mature, to fully manifest, and then he makes it. Then he makes a decision or he addresses that decision. And to me, that's not a good sign of.
That's a good point.
I don't even want to say the word problems as it being here. What I look at it at like this is in the NHL, in the NFL, in all these, it's the progressive minds. It's the people that find an underlying issue or an underlying solution before others. And maybe the problem isn't that he hasn't been able to identify problems soon enough. It's that he hasn't been able to roll out solutions in a manner that make me say this guy understood what was in front of him and he made the necessary changes and approaches that needed to be made before it manifested as a serious problem. And my big thing right now is I don't want to necessarily believe that Jason Bottrell felt very confident about Jeff Skinner signing, that he didn't get it done sooner. But I think there was a little bit of cockiness there that
Jeff Skinner was going to resign, and now and if they lose Jeff Skinner because of 1 year of term, that to me could really put Jason Botterill in a bad
place. It might be more that he would leave just because the guy's never made the playoffs in his career, and he wants to go somewhere where that's going to happen. But I think that's a valid worry, and I think it would be a valid criticism because we don't know that. He didn't try to sign Skinner sooner. Maybe he did, and Skinner wanted to wait out the season. But we have evidence, like you said. I think it is true, and it can be true, that he's kind of dragged his feet on some issues.
Mm-hmm.
Or not even that, but that it takes him time to figure stuff out. And that can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing when when there is a problem and it continues to go on and go on and go on because you're not sure that it needs to be addressed. Like, when he first got here, and that was right when Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean took over.
Right.
And I'm looking over at the football team, and they showed up. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Right.
They were
a plan.
Cut and bait. They were getting rid of Watkins. They were getting rid of Darius. They were getting rid of Ronald Darby. They were clearing house. They were cleaning out the salary cap. They knew what they were doing. It seemed like 2-3 years in advance.
Yeah.
When they showed up here to now, doesn't seem like they had a plan that, hey, we are going to get rid of the old guys with bad contracts.
This is the type of hockey we want to play. There was none of that.
When Botterill showed up here, the roster in large part stayed the same. There were a couple of quick fixes he tried to make on the blue line because anybody could have looked at that blue line and seen you can't do this anymore.
In hindsight, though, did not work.
Sure. Well, Scandella, Beaulieu were his two moves to do that. And the rest of it, he let it play out for a year. And he didn't make any big change within a year. And that's a long time.
Yeah.
Like, you're a GM on a team that, by the way, has now the longest playoff drought in the NHL with fans that are very impatient. A year is a long time. And really, that's how long it took before there was any big, major change. And then, this last year, kind of the same thing. Like, not a lot happening when there is a problem. And the Sabres, after that 10-game win streak, went into a tailspin.
Yeah.
They were collapsing in front of our eyes.
And
nothing was done, not firing the coach. By the way, the Blues did that. Now they're in the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
No moves at center.
Right.
When you knew, even when the win streak was going on, we saw, hey, there's no one down the middle giving you anything on offense other than Jack Eichel. And nothing was done about any one of those
issues. And literally
issues.
The last day of the day of the trading deadline, they decided to make a move on the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
They traded away a first-round pick, and they get a good blue line. I like Brandon Montour. I think that he's going to be a nice piece for this team.
But it was so far past gone,
it didn't matter.
They were 10 points out.
That move became almost irrelevant to me because of the time that it took place.
At least for the short term.
Here's what really pissed me off, right? Was that ownership comes out and says, well, we knew we weren't as good as what we saw in that 10-game win streak, right?
That's fair. That's fair.
That is totally fair. Why would you admit that? Why would you admit that?
Well, I mean, I think only Terry Pegula was admitting to, like, when they were in first place.
No, I get that.
Because that's what the question
was. Nobody thought
that
team was going to maintain that first place.
No, of course not.
But you know what? How about if you thought that you weren't that good, but you got to that point? That you aren't immediately saying, okay, we're better than we thought. We maybe aren't this good. So you know what? Let's make a move right now. We're in a position where maybe another player on this roster can really help us take the next step and maintain a pace that maybe isn't 10 games, but that we're winning 6 out of every 10.
Well, you would
or we're winning 5 out of every 10 instead of losing 2 out of, or you know, instead of winning 2 out of every 15.
Well, when they had stored up enough points where they were number one in the league, they had banked points. They were way ahead. They didn't have to be a playoff team, but by point pace for the rest of that season, they had to be last season. They had to be 500.
Yeah.
They had to be 500. And yeah, like I think that's a valid criticism that they didn't when they were on top of the league say, "All right, we know we're not this good, but you know what? We're going to take advantage of it because we're way out in front." And this is a big bonus to be way out in front when we don't think we're this good. So we're going to take advantage of it, and we're going to go get a second-line center. We're going to do that, and we're going to try to make the playoffs here. And nothing happened on that front. And to me, it is valid to worry that because Botterill seemed to
take a long time figuring out what he needed to do with the previous core that was here, the O'Reillys, the Canes, etc., Leonard. It took a year to figure that out. And then there didn't come anything quick in terms of salvaging the season or taking advantage of you being in first place that I think you can think, hey, maybe he took a long time figuring out if he really wanted to sign Skinner long-term, like to a big mega deal. And I think that's a thing to worry about.
I think so, too. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. We will talk some NBA, but this is a good conversation and one that I think merits more additional talk because as this decision with Jeff Skinner comes down to, we're coming down to that decision very soon. The NHL draft approaches. There are a lot of large signifying moments for this franchise and maybe more importantly for Jason Bottrell coming in the next 2 months. I think we're going to have a very good view of what this team is in 2019 within the next few months, and I'm nervous. There's just no two ways about it. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Sports Talk Saturday continues on next here on WGR.
Even when he was coming out of school, I never bought into the accuracy thing because everyone only just pointed to a number. And when you watch the tape, there wasn't like these massive accuracy issues. And I didn't see that last year. I was someone who kind of pointed out some concerns of him coming out and was also the same person that last year said, man, Josh Allen did some really nice things, like really good stuff. Not just encouraging, but like, wow, this kid could be special type stuff.
Big Dan Orlovsky fan, a Dan Orlovsky fan account at Nick Geary WGR. That's me. I didn't tell you guys. Someone was golfing yesterday, me and my dad. Second time this week, me and my dad went. My dad, out of midair, hit a bird on his drive.
Like that, it was going around social media. Somebody did that.
So it was different. That was less impressive than what my dad did. So Okay. The one that I think you saw was like a, probably like a drunk guy hit a bird that was standing on the ground, like a large size.
No, the one I saw, he was in the air, but he was like right above him. Almost.
Okay.
Like pretty close.
So this was one of those things where I'm sitting in the golf cart. He's teeing off. He tees off. And this bird was, I can't really describe the size of it.
Like a crow?
Much smaller, like a
finch.
I don't know what a finch is.
A finch is like the really small ones.
You know the ones, those smaller blackbirds with the bright orange on the wings?
Yeah.
It was like that size.
Is that an oriole?
Maybe. I don't believe so. No, I don't believe so. I don't believe that's an oriole. Either way, I would say it's oriole sized. So
you weren't sure it was an oriole, but it's oriole sized.
I would say that, yeah.
Then I'm going to guess it's probably an oriole.
No. I know what you're talking about. An oriole's got the orange underneath.
That's right.
On the wings.
This there's okay. Like two spots on the wings.
Yeah. Okay.
So my dad tees off, hits it dead on. I mean, kills the thing on impact. And I've just never seen anything like that in person.
Like Randy Johnson.
It's exact. And here's the thing: like the golf ranger, like the course ranger, was stopped as he's teeing off right behind him. Sees the whole thing. He's like, it's unbelievable. Like, I've never seen anything. You hear about it, right? But a lot of times people are, like, trying. You're videotaping. You're like, oh, look at that bird. I'm going to try to hit that bird, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's
just, you're a jerk, as it is. But my dad just absolutely smoked this thing. And it was one of those things where no matter how, even if he tried, there's no way he would have gotten it. It was just because it was flying through the sight, like his sight. And yeah. He didn't even know it was there. And the funny thing is, two holes before it, I'm like, you need to keep your head down. You're lifting your head too much, and you're topping the ball. Keep your head down. So he's like, I kept my head down for an extra second. So he didn't actually see it happen. He just heard it. And then watched the bird fall out of the midair.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was, I would say,
wow.
The contact was made in the next tee box up. So we were playing from the whites, and it.
Okay, so like maybe like 20 yards up?
Maybe. Maybe less. Like, it was so soon into the contact and the flight of that ball that I just, it was really an unbelievable thing.
Do you get a phone call from PETA?
I told my dad he might. I got it on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, you can check it out. I don't have the actual video of him hitting it, but I have the bird.
Wow.
Who has since forth died.
R.I.P. that bird.
R.I.P. that bird. 803-0551, 888-552-550, or hang out and hold. We will get to you on the other side of this break. You're listening to Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.